This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
Well, good morning. It's a crawfish kind of morning. Thanks for joining us here on Deep South Dining. Malcolm White here. Carol is away on Crawfish Day. But it is also the solar eclipse day. So happy solar eclipse to one and all. In the studio with me today is Pat White. No relation, but a great friend. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Malcolm.
Yeah, man, we're glad you're here. We're going to talk about crawfish as we go along and other exciting things. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about a piece I saw on the internet, a story about the sandwich, which was about the tomato sandwich. And it was the quintessential how to make a tomato sandwich. It is that time of year. Do you grow tomatoes, Pat?
I have in the past.
But not this year?
Not this year.
You're taking actually. A year off.
I'm taking the year off. It's too easy to go by the tomato place in Vicksburg.
Correct. But anyway, so this fellow, Sean Dietrich, Sean Dietrich, he goes by the handle of Sean of the South, and he has a website, and you can check that out. But he wrote this beautiful piece about the tomato sandwich, the pure essence of white bread, mayonnaise, tomato, don't complicate it. It's a really hilarious piece. I invite each and every one of you to go to SeanDietrich.com, SeanDietrich.com, and check out his April 5th post, The Sandwich. And if you do that, then we can talk more about the quintessential tomato sandwich. But in his piece, I think he is based in Pensacola or somewhere in the panhandle. In his piece, he talks about what he considers the best tomatoes in the country are grown in his opinion at Slocum, Alabama. Slocum, Alabama is in Geneva County, Alabama, and he says, much like the Smith County tomato that we have here in Mississippi, he claims it's the best tomato in the land. And I don't know. What kind of – do you have a favorite variety, Pat?
Not really. I do prefer the old heirlooms. I feel like those make a fine tomato sandwich.
Yeah.
And like you said, I'm not a fan of complicated it. White bread, mayonnaise, salt, and pepper.
This is a favorite topic on Deep South Dining. Do you have a favorite mayonnaise?
Topic of conversation comes up pretty frequently in our house, but I'd say Blue Plate is our go-to.
Wow, yeah. Blue Plate. Sean Dietrich is a Duke's man, you know, the good Southern.
Duke's has made an appearance recently in the house.
Has it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Any particular reason you slipped in some Duke's?
I think it was left over after a cookout.
And you thought, well, we're not going to throw it out.
Yeah,
we're
going to go ahead. No need to waste mayonnaise.
No. Could you decipher a difference
between blind taste test? I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm a Hellman's guy, but Carol is a Duke's lady, so I don't know. It's a fun thing to talk about. But check out this story on the tomato sandwich. Also, Friday night, I went to the Mississippi Museum of Art to see our great friend Kate Medley's presentation of her book, Thank You, Please Come Again. It is a book of photography and narrative, and Kate was presenting there at the Museum of Art. It had about 300 people. It was a great crowd. And Eddie Wright's Barbecue was serving the food, and if Java was in the room, he would have something to say about Eddie Wright and Eddie Wright's Barbecue. But I had a barbecue sundae. Pat, have you ever had a barbecue sundae?
No, sir, I have not. Explain that.
Well, the first time I ever had a barbecue sundae, it was at the Rebel Drive-In in Oxford. It's a little barbecue place, drive-through. And they layer beans, meat, coleslaw, barbecue sauce, like a sundae would, with, you know, ice cream, fruit, you know. So Eddie was serving a barbecue sundae, so I couldn't resist. So that was my dinner on Friday night. It was great, and it was also great to see Kate Medley's book out and about and doing really, really well. And we had her on, I guess, about a month ago. Is that when we had her on? I can't remember. But we had a nice interview with Kate. And if you haven't checked out her book, Thank You, Please Come Again, I would invite you to do just that. Also in the news, the James Beard Awards have announced their finalists. And these are down to five in each category. And Mississippi has two nominees still in the running. We have Hunter Evans of Elvie's here in Jackson, nominated for Best Chef in the South.
Yeah, one of Bellhaven's own.
That's right. And you know Hunter?
I do.
Have you eaten there a few times?
Several times.
Yeah.
Never had a bad meal there.
No, it's great. And you know what I love about it? It's an all-day cafe. It's breakfast,
absolutely,
lunch, and dinner. And they're always open throughout the day. You can get breakfast anytime during the day you want.
Yeah. The atmosphere at Bellhaven Town Center is hard to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great.
Really great. It's really great. So congratulations to Hunter, and we hope that you can continue to stay in the running. Also, Vestige from Ocean Springs, Mississippi, nominated as a finalist for Outstanding Restaurant Nationwide.
Wow.
So congratulations to the Vestige folks, and what a great restaurant that is. Have you ever had
that experience? Not, no.
Really good, very different. They've been there, I think, 10 years in an old house right there in the middle of Ocean Springs. They're doing good work. Also in the news, unfortunately, this is something you might know about. The historic Carriage House restaurant in Natchez is closing.
Oh, wow.
Maybe you've been there? You know about it?
I have before. Yeah. I've worked Adams County in the past.
Right.
Wow.
So you were telling me when you were in the oil and gas business, you worked all the side roads and up and down the
absolutely
state, and you kind of knew every place all the
absolutely
way down into Florida.
Yeah. Gas station chicken tenders all through Mississippi, and the best Cuban food you've ever eaten is just a gas station away down in Tampa, Florida. It's interesting where you go. Depends on what's available.
Right. So, you know, also besides the Carriage House in Natchez, you know, Lusco's is wrapping it up in Greenwood. They are serving their last weekends here upon us. And then the next generation of Lusco family is moving the operation to Taylor, Mississippi.
No kidding.
Into the Plan Air development out there in the same hood with the Taylor Catfish, and Lusco's will open there and will be based there from now on.
Great. So not going away forever.
Right. So we'll still have the pompano and the booths and the shrimp and the steaks and all that beautiful stuff. And I, finally in the news, Mississippi universities have announced two new executive chefs. You might not think that's a big deal, but we do. Millsaps College has a new chef, Chef Dave Woodard, who I do not know. You know him, Pat?
No, sir. Do not.
Also, the W has a new chef, Chef Wade Shoemake, is coming on board. So two new chefs in the university system. So we wish them well. Now, before we take a break, I want to talk about something I posted on Facebook, Pat, and you and I touched on it just briefly. This thing I call egg in a hole. It's a piece of bread with the center cut out and an egg dropped over into the center while the bread is cooking and toasting. And you cook the one side and then you flip it over and cook it on the other side. So growing up, we didn't have this at my house growing up, but Hal and I discovered it in our 20s or 30s and became huge fans of it, and would make it all the time, and we're always looking for egg in the hole. So you had it growing up?
Not from my parents, but had it at, you know, small diners, stuff like that.
Right.
Was always interested in just the name, figuring out what it exactly was. But no, it's funny you touched on that. So you are an egg in the hole flipper. I've seen some that just toast one side and leave it sunny side up.
Well, that's the thing. If you want it sunny side up, you don't flip it. But if you want it over light or over well or medium or whatever term you wish to use, then you got to flip it.
And if you have trouble with the fried egg like I do, the egg in the hole usually helps out with the flip.
So you struggle. What is it? You always break your yolks?
I seem to do it, yes. Yeah.
Do you flip or do you spatula?
No matter how gentle I am, I seem to lose every time.
Just can't make it work.
No luck in the egg department.
Okay. Well, you know, I like to what I call blister an egg, and people think that's a weird term, but I like to fry it really the whites very crisp, but leaving the yolk still a little loose.
Absolutely.
So what I discovered by posting on social media this egg in a hole was that many people know about it, but many people have different names for it. And this is an endless topic of fascination for me. So here are a list of names that different people call this egg.
Okay, I'm ready
bread.
For this.
Okay. Gas house egg.
Wow.
And I have no idea what the reference is. Egg in a frame.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Of course, frames are typically square, but rectangular. An egg is normally round, but we can go with that. This is a good one. Hobo eggs.
Huh.
I think this is a Liz Cleveland name. She said growing up, they called them hobo eggs. And there's a good one. Toad in a hole. Toad in a hole.
Appetizing.
Yeah, right. Egg in a basket, which, you know, that I can sort of see egg in a basket. Yeah. Eggs Birmingham. Now, I tried to, there was a link on Eggs Birmingham, and I tried to go to the link, but it kept notifying me that I had won some sort of award, and all I had to do was fill out the survey to read the story.
Yeah,
and of
lucky
course,
you.
It's my lucky day, but I elected not to.
Yeah,
so I still don't know the history of Eggs Birmingham as it relates to eggs in a hole. And here's a good one, One-Eyed Jack.
Huh.
That's if you just cook one.
Just one.
Yeah. So I guess it could be Two-Eyed Jack. So those are the names. If you are familiar with this dish and you have a name we did not include today, we would certainly love to hear from you. It's easy to reach us when you can always shoot us an email at food@mpbonline.org. We're going to dig into this topic of crawfish and what I call the crawfish conundrum this year. It was a very peculiar year in the crawfish market. But Pat White is here to tell us what he knows about the topic, and he knows a lot. So we look forward to hearing from him. So we'll take a break, and we'll come back. If you want to join us, feel free to. We're going to talk about egg in a hole. We're going to talk about the ideal perfect tomato sandwich, and we're going to talk about crawfish. Malcolm White, along with Pat White, no relation, but I don't know, where's your family from?
So our whites come out of the Satarsha area.
Okay.
I believe came to Jackson in the 50s to sharecrop off McDowell Road.
Really?
Yeah, so we came to South Jackson, that's where I was born. So we're Jacksonians.
But out of the Satarsha area, I love that area. That's where the hills drop into
the
delta.
Absolutely.
Willie Morris loved Satarsha, and he and I used to ride over there one time a lot. On Sunday afternoons, Willie loved to get in the car and go. In fact, I'll tell you a story. When he and Eudora Welty were out riding one day in that area, and they came to a crossroad that Willie was unfamiliar with. And, you know, Willie grew up in Yazoo City, so he kind of knew all those roads. And he said, I don't know, Eudora, what do you think? You think we should take that road that we've never been down before? She said, we'd be fools if we didn't. So that's the way that I approach a good country road.
Absolutely.
So it is a peculiar year for crawfish. Summarize, if you could, kind of how we got into the situation that we're into.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been cooking crawfish a long time, and I think this is the most expensive year I've seen yet.
Yeah, they're high. Yeah. High as cat's back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, of course, everything's going up, including transportation costs, but I think the main thing was the drought this year. You know, almost 100 days consecutive, no rain. So the farmers in, you know, Opelousas, central southern Louisiana area, you know, they're having to pump a lot of water keep mm-hmm. water in the rice fields to harvest. So just costly all around.
Right.
So the season started out really light, and supply and demand dictated.
I mean, the prices were almost $13 a pound. Right?
I saw $12.99 and $13.99 a pound for cooked crawfish. Yeah.
Wow.
That's $8, $9 a pound live.
Wow. And what are they today? I know you said you had crawfish yesterday.
Yeah, we went to crawl that hole yesterday. Uh-huh. And they're just starting to get, you know, season's getting perfect time.
Right.
Getting big, full of fat, you mm-hmm. know, easy to peel. So, you know, I think live prices is around $3.75, $4 a pound.
And you told me that the crawfish have gotten large enough now, yesterday, to where there's actually large claws where
yeah.
you can get the claw meat
yeah,
out.
Yeah, we peeled or picked some good claw meat yesterday, actually, yeah.
So that's when you know they're sort of
– in my opinion, that's the best time peaking. Of the year. Yeah, when the claws are soft, they're easy to peel, they're starting to get full of fat and plump. Yeah, it's starting to get really good.
Now, how did you get into cooking crawfish as a hobby?
Well, I'd eaten crawfish as a young man, but we used to do a cookout at Judge and Cleet Ellington's house mm-hmm. in Belhaven, and we started cooking there, and I watched some of the older guys do it, and I saw ways that I could improve on it.
Let's say. So you got your own style?
Absolutely, yeah. And so I do some things that aren't necessarily traditional in a Cajun boil. But
can you share those
absolutely.
Non-traditional things?
Absolutely. I start out with a very basic, you know, store-bought Zatarain's mix. You know,
dry or wet?
Liquid and powder.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also do a lot of citrus. I would describe my boil as, you know, citrus garlic butter. I don't like it too spicy. You know, uh-huh. I want people to enjoy it.
If they want heat, they can add heat.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can mm-hmm. always sprinkle straight cayenne on it if that's what you want. If that's what you're looking for.
Right.
If
you want a swollen tongue, go ahead.
Absolutely. But I also, like I said, use a lot of citrus.
Lemon?
Lemon and orange.
And orange, okay.
Yeah, so that's, you know, one of the things I think makes me stand out is I use a lot more orange than a lot of folks. In addition, I use... sriracha and crystal hot sauce.
Oh boy!
Yeah, so the extra kind of vinegar.
I love crystal. That's my favorite hot sauce.
I'm a fan as well. Yeah, but the extra vinegar taste. I mm-hmm. think that helps out. And then you know, always add butter. Helps with the peeling, in my opinion.
Right.
And everything's better with butter.
Now, do you do onion or garlic? Or?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Onion and minced garlic, and then I actually, you know, a lot of times we'll cook whole cloves.
Right. Put them down in
there. Or a whole onion as well. Just let them boil in there.
Then they make a good side dish.
Yeah. And so I do crawfish on its own and then have a completely separate array of vegetables. We love cauliflower, you know, Brussels sprouts, pineapple is a recent addition to the boil. Yeah.
And you cook that in a Cubillon, a spiced Cajun water.
Absolutely. So usually I cook my crawfish,
but separately.
Them soak, and then I will follow up with all my vegetables.
In that same boil?
In that same pot, yeah.
That the crawfish came
Absolutely.
Out of.
Absolutely.
So first the crawfish.
Correct.
And then the vegetables.
Yeah, and you can
same
do...
Same Cubillon.
Yeah, you can do them together. I think there are a lot of experts out there that do, but...
But the cooking time wouldn't be the same. It would seem
that,
like if...
That is, it is like an orchestra trying to make... You know, everything get its perfect amount of cooking time.
Right.
That's why, in my opinion, crawfish is the star. You concentrate on making those perfect, and then everything else is just a bonus.
Now, when you say pineapple, do you put chunks of pineapple in the whole thing?
I cut the top and the bottom off of it, cut it into four, and then
four wedges, and just drop it in.
And then, yeah, and boil them same amount as the potatoes, you know, 12 to 15 minutes.
How about your corn?
The corn, I actually use just frozen corn, and I usually drop that in when the crawfish are done to shock the boil, you know, stop the cooking process. And there's, you know, they're going to soak for 30.
You throw them in there frozen?
Throw them in there frozen.
To shock.
Yeah, and so, you know, you're stopping a boil immediately, and then they're going to soak for 30 to 45 minutes, so plenty of time to cook a frozen corn in there.
So you do the crawfish first, then the corn, shock it.
Correct.
And then take the crawfish out and the corn out.
After it's soaked.
Then add.
After it's soaked, dump the crawfish, bring it back to a boil, and that's when you start the vegetables.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
That's great. That's good technique. All right, we got a couple of callers. We're going to take those, and then we'll return to the topic du jour of crawfish season, which I believe runs November to July. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's a good all-around season. Yeah. Now, of course, there's hot points in the middle, of course. But
hot points.
Yeah,
being
when they're really good.
Like now.
Like now.
Right,
yeah.
Gotcha. All right, Joan from Starkville is calling about a food event. Hello, Joan. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for calling. What's happening?
Yes, on this Saturday, April 13th, is the International Fiesta. It takes place on MSU campus on the drill field from 11 till 3. And we have 40 booths set up, and most of them are selling food.
Oh.
And the food is, this is the International Fiesta, so the food is from everywhere. We have people from India, a Hispanic group, Chinese group, Nepalese group, Muslim group, Filipino group, Caribbean group, the women from Starkville that are Hispanic, Ukrainian community. So we have a suite of palate-tasty food that is available for purchase. The event itself is free, 11 till 3. We start with our parade of flags. We walk across the drill field, and we have 120 flags.
Oh, boy.
We hope to have them all carried. We'll be starting out with the percussion and the bagpiper, Tim Gordon. He'll be leading the parade.
How cool. So I guess this is sort of an outgrowth of the international community that has become that of Mississippi State University, right?
Yes. It actually started with the World Neighbors Association, a group of international women and men in town, and we started by them. And then we thought, well, we'll include the university because a lot of us are university folks.
Wow.
So it is just amazing. We have a stage where we have entertainment all day long from 11 till 3, and we have bouncy houses for the kids to get rid of some of that energy.
Of course you do.
And we have pinata twice during the event.
Okay.
Where kids can squat at the pinata. So it's a real international event, and there's displays where you can ask people questions about different parts of the world. So it is your trip around the world without having to buy a plane ticket.
Right there on the campus of Mississippi State University on the drill field.
Beautiful Starkville, Mississippi.
That's right. And Pat, what do you know about Mississippi State University?
They got a pretty good bit of my money. But I left Starkville with a degree, so that's all that matters.
You know, I left Starkville, but I did not leave with a degree. It was years later. But, Joan, thanks so much for sharing. Again, the title of the event, the internet, what'd you say?
It's the 32nd International Fiesta.
International Fiesta.
International Fiesta.
Very good.
And it's from 11 till 3, but if you want to carry a flag, and we welcome anybody to carry a flag.
If you want to march in the parade, you got to get there early.
That's right. 10:45, thereabouts.
Okay.
And you can get a flag. So, and wear a costume from a foreign country if you have
one. Ah, okay.
Everybody else will be wearing them, so yeah. You may as well fit in.
Excellent. Well, Joan, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for calling. And folks, if you're interested and available on Saturday to go over to Starkville on the campus of Mississippi State University, the International Fiesta will be going on. Thank you so much, Joan.
And thank you for your program. I listen to it every Monday morning. So
oh,
it's
that's
great.
Nice.
It's
that's great. Sweet. Thank you. We're also on Sunday mornings at 9 as well. And but we appreciate you're listening and giving us a call. All right, next caller from Louisiana somewhere, a big state. Polly is calling to talk a little bit more about egg in the hole.
Great.
Hello, Polly.
Hey, Malcolm. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have another item to add to your egg in the hole genre.
Okay, I've got a list going here.
Okay, this is called Egg in the Nest, and I grew up with this. It's two pieces of bread. You take your biscuit cutter and make a hole in one and put it on top of the solid piece of bread. Then you get two strips of bacon, and you cut it in two, and you drape the bacon around the crust.
Okay.
That's your nest. That's right. Your nest. and then you crack the egg in the middle, and then you put it under the broiler.
You put it in the oven.
Under the broiler.
Okay. All right.
Now, if you have real fatty bacon, you might want to pop it in the microwave for a minute. But you don't have to do that. But if you like crispy, you might
do that. Good idea.
So you have your eggs, bacon, and toast. Oh, yeah, and you toast the little round part that you cut out.
Right.
You put butter on that and toast it with the egg in the
I always toast the round, and I take it aside and put a little jelly on it is what I do when I'm cooking egg in a hole. Well, look, Polly, thank you so much. That was a good description of the egg in the nest because it's all-inclusive there with the eggs, bacon, and toast.
Right. You should try it.
I will, by all means. Thank you so much. We appreciate you listening. Right. Appreciate you calling.
And, love you, Scott.
Thank you so much. Pat, we're going to come back. We're going to continue to talk about crawfish. And I'll tell you, I got an invitation to an annual crawfish boil the other day in the mail. And it said on there, annual, 11th, 12th annual crawfish boil. This year featuring boiled shrimp. So
it's a good pivot for this year.
Yeah, I would think that might be what's happening. We're going to ask John Lester from Dugan Seafood about that. John's going to join us on the phone, and we're going to talk a little bit about, continue to talk about crawfish and alternatives perhaps this year. Malcolm White here with Pat White. Pat, glad you're here, my man.
Glad to be here.
So happy to have you on the show. We got a caller on the line who I asked to call. It's the legendary John Lester, who runs Dugan Seafood that parks on Thursdays and Fridays at the Maywood. No, the... John, what's
DeVille.
That?
DeVille.
What's that parking lot?
Yeah,
DeVille. Park. Sorry, I'm about to mess you up there. And you.
That's okay.
And Dugan's seafood history goes back to what, 1973? Is that when Dugan started?
Yeah, I think 50 years last year. So we're working on 51.
Wow. And you're on Thursdays and Fridays. Do I have that right?
Yes, sir. 10 to 6. And then we have a second location. And Gluckstadt, that's Thursday and Friday, 10 to 6, and some Saturdays, 10 to 2, if we can get enough stuff in.
Great. And you typically carry fish, shrimp, crab meat. Is that what's your typical sort of menu?
Yeah, we usually always have some shucked oysters. I can get sacks. We have fresh picked crab meat when available, depending on the weather here lately. And then several sizes of shrimp. This last week I had some really big water reds. I had some Key West pinks. Hmm. Usually have some jumbo shrimp, medium and large, extra large. And then we'll have a variety of fish, and it's usually always salmon, namornahi, tuna, redfish, grouper, snapper. I can get speckled trout or triple tail. Lots of flounder, whole and or fillet, and then mahi, cobia. I'm sure I'm leaving something out, but those are the normal offerings.
Right. And so we've been talking about crawfish and the kind of strange crawfish season that we have. I know you don't deal in crawfish, but I'm sure you're plugged into
it. Actually, we do. I get sacks for people, but I don't keep them on hand,
So what's your take on this year? Pat was saying that the prices are coming down and the crawfish are getting good, that the claws are growing. And what'd you call it? The time of year?
Just the time of the molting season, when their shells are kind of soft, the abdomen's just full of head fat, getting plump, easy to peel, hold a lot of good seasoning.
Yeah. So what's going on in terms, John, of people getting and buying and going on with the crawfish world?
When they try to find sacks from the boilers are not getting their full orders. So they're charging more, and they're not letting you have as many sacks. Hmm. So now he's right. We're getting in the best good time of the year. The water and the land, so to speak, the temperature's warming up, so the crawfish are on the move and eating, and they're doing their thing. So this is, you know, getting into a good time. The prices just start coming down since we're after Easter. I guess the busiest crawfish day of the year is Saturday before Easter, especially below I-10.
I think prices went up 50 cents this year, the week before Easter.
Yeah, they did. They always go up the week before Easter because they're taking advantage of the want and the need.
Absolutely.
But I believe they've come down at least 50 cents last week. I'm expecting them to come down some more this week. I will say this, since it took a while to get enough rain in and all for all the harvesting areas to be active again, the whole industry is behind, so to speak. So my thought is the price drop will not be as quick and as dramatic as in more normal years right after Easter. It usually just starts, dropping pretty rapidly. I don't know that we're going to see that, and I don't expect it to go down in the low $2 range or anything like that. I mean, it could.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, have you noticed a run on shrimp? A lot of the people I know have replaced crawfish bulls or do very limited crawfish and focus more on Mississippi Gulf shrimp.
Exactly. It's been both. Some have bailed completely and say, I'm not paying that much for crawfish, and they've been ordering shrimp. And especially that week of Easter, had a lot of people on Saturday doing their – they're probably expat Louisiana people that are up here doing their normal crawfish boil on the Saturday before Easter. But some went wholeheartedly, just all in for shrimp. But a lot have been doing, I don't want to pay that much, and it's hard to get 8 sacks or 6 sacks or whatever. I'll get 1 or 2 sacks of crawfish, and then I'll buy some shrimp. And so they've been doing that, and I think that's a good deal. And most of the time when people do a crawfish boil and they invite a lot of people, they realize that not everybody likes crawfish or wants to fool with peeling crawfish. So a lot of times they'll come by and buy 10 or 15 or 20 pounds of shrimp, and just to have something there other than the crawfish,
Has this affected the price of the shrimp?
Well, there's other forces on the prices of shrimp that have been trying to force them down. There was a glut of shrimp last year in the peeled shrimp and the frozen shrimp and the big regional distributors' freezers, and then that can affect boat price, what the boat can get when they're bringing in fresh shrimp. And we've had a just like on crab meat, we've had really windy and a lot of weather and a lot of fronts coming through. So it's been kind of rough. A lot of boats not going out because it can be dangerous, and you don't catch as much when it's really high winds and the weather's bad. So you don't want to tear your equipment up or hurt anybody. So I would say right now that shrimp prices are pretty stable. They may even be lower than they have been in the past. I don't think that's going to hold. I think with some other foreign pressures and government pressures and some other things, I think shrimp prices will probably start to rise some. I just talked to my main shrimp guy last week about that, and so there's a lot of pressures on the shrimp industry, domestic wise.
Right. Well, earlier in the show, Pat shared kind of his cooking technique. Do you have a crawfish cooking technique or some pointers or secrets or advice you could share?
There's several, ways to do it. Some people boil in plain water and then have a soak pot. It's like strawberry jam or something. It's really spiced up and all. And they cook them until just about done and then move them to that soak pot. It's not hot. But I do the general kind of way is I boil them just for a few minutes and then a long soak. And that's the way I like to do it.
How long do you soak?
30 minutes, you know, sometimes longer.
Agree. 30, 45 minutes. I tell people all the time,
yeah,
it takes
45.
What it takes for the crawfish to soak. You can't rush perfection.
You can't. You just go try one every now and then, you know, and you can tell when it's getting there. And you can also tell that, okay, I need to cool it down some more, or I need to get them out because they're going to get overcooked, you know. So, but the thing is there's several ways. Some people will spray the outside of the pot, cool it down. Some people will throw several handfuls of ice in there, because what you're trying to do is get it from just below the boiling point and then just let it kind of naturally change temperature. And this happens with the shrimp, too, maybe even more so with a tenderer shell. But as that temperature changes, that's when the protein, the tail, starts pulling in the seasoning. And so that long soak, I agree, 30, 45 minutes, depending on how big they are, how tough the shell is at that time. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and I think a lot depends, just like shrimp, the better the crawfish, the better the shrimp,
the
easier it's going to be to cook.
Yeah. Sure.
John,
they've been around for a while, they get kind of dried out, and that makes them much harder to feel. So,
did either of you see that video that went viral, the Louisiana girl posted with the fishing spiders in the crawfish?
I did not.
Kind of a thing. John, did you see that?
No, I did not see that.
You know those little spiders, they call fishing spiders, that get in the crawfish, I guess, and they don't get them cleaned out before they sack them up. You ever run across those?
Yeah. I haven't in mind.
I have.
You have, okay. Well, anyway, this video had an abundance of spiders in it, and it like freaking everybody else out that the spiders had taken over the crawfish population or something. But anyway,
John, let me ask you a question about shrimp.
That's probably a weather and temperature anomaly of this particular season. All the stars aligned and those things hatched out big time and were everywhere. I've seen them years where there were little snails all the time, all in. Anyway, what's the question?
So I wanted to ask, have you ever heard of a spider as referred to a shrimp? It's kind of like the soft shell crab versions, the head of a shrimp. And I think it's a very small window, I guess, when they're molting.
Exactly.
But there's a very small piece of meat left in the head after the tail's removed. And you batter it and fry it just like a soft shell crab and eat the whole head.
Exactly. Very tasty. And Asian cuisine are all over that, but in recent years that has kind of popped up and been a big thing. I've had people come and buy from me to do that. I was going to ask you if you'd ever had a soft shell crawfish. Did you see a place in Gulfport or Biloxi? I think it was called Claw Daddy's. I think that was the name of that place. And you could get a soft shell crawfish po' boy.
Wow, no, I've never heard of that.
It was excellent.
We used to serve those at Howlin' Mouths. We had a supplier who was a retired professor at Gulf Coast Community College in Perkingston, who was our old neighbor when we grew up there. And he had a little cinder block building, and he molted.
Shedding house.
Right, he had a shedding house, and he grew these soft shell crawfish for us.
No kidding.
And we had them as po' boys. They were so delicious. But he gave it up after about 5 years. And I've never heard of a provider since then. But you say there's a guy down in Gulfport?
Well, no, I mean, that was years ago when we had those. And I don't know where he was getting those. But in South Louisiana, it's a thing or has been a thing, but it's a dying art, just like soft shells. The industry has changed. The way they shed them now is they have these big buildings that are, you know, no windows, enclosed, and saltwater tanks and lights, lots of lights above them on the ceiling. And they kind of speed up time for them by cutting on the lights and cutting them off in intervals that they can get more soft shells to shed at one time instead of standing around waiting for one at a time. Because you have to get them out of the water, because the ones that are still hard shell will eat them.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah. So, but I think that's the same kind of thing that they would do with the crawfish to some degree. But, in the past few years, we've through attrition and people dying and shedders are not as prevalent as they used to be, and so the soft shells have gone up, and it's just hard to combine as easily as it was, say, 5 years ago. So I don't know where that's going. You know, it's a little more work than a lot of people want to do, that kind of thing. So it's kind of a dying art, so I'm kind of concerned about it.
When we were young, we would eat softshell crabs, but they were referred to as busters back in the day.
They are. That's how they get them. The shedders will get the busters from the crab doctor or the crab fisherman, and those are the ones that they know are getting ready to shed, and so that's, you know, and they still do that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's referred to as a buster.
Right. But I remember you could go in a restaurant in certain times of the year and order the broil busters, and they would be like three small soft shells on a little plate with lemon butter, yeah, garlic. They were delicious. You can't get them anymore. Hardly, maybe.
Yeah.
So what is soft shell crab season? Is it a season now?
Well, yeah, and it has to do with the temperature of the water and that kind of thing, and where the sun is and all that kind of stuff. But generally, it usually starts, I would guess, towards the end of this month, and it could be sooner or later.
Right.
And then we've had them as late as the week before Thanksgiving, when you know, those guys that were shedding said that they were going to go hunting and out in the woods and drinking, and they were shutting down.
Enough of that.
Priorities.
Yeah, you got to have.
Dang, yeah, it didn't work, and you know, got to go play. But and it really just depends on the year, on the season, and the temperature, and salinity, the water, and all those things, you know, into play.
Well, John, thanks so very much for calling in and giving us a report.
Sure.
We appreciate you always for the work you do,
yes,
and
sir,
the knowledge that you have and you're willing to share. So that's John Lester from Dugan Seafood calling in from Gluckstadt, Mississippi. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, guys. Good talk to you.
So, Pat, you know, back to the crawfish. You were saying that you were down at your camp this weekend. What'd you cook when you were out in the woods this weekend?
Well, this weekend we kept it pretty simple. Just burgers, hot dogs, and we ended up frying some wings. Did a good Asian zing wing. Yeah. You know, we had a bunch of people down, enjoyed the beautiful weather.
So other than crawfish, what would you consider your specialty? Would it be grilling, cooking out, smoking?
I can tell you I'm best at the crawfish.
That
but
you can.
I do enjoy smoking barbecue, you know, pork butt, ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So I love time in the kitchen for sure, but being out, you know, the fellowship of a crawfish boil is just hard to beat. You know,
you're not in the kitchen
by yourself, and I think that's what I really enjoy the most about it.
Yeah, it's the fellowship of sitting around a table with a lot of folks, generally family and people you know and like. And you were telling me that the crawfish hole was just packed this Saturday.
Yeah.
You said it was their biggest day of the year.
I think it was one of the biggest days they've had this year. In my opinion, some of the best crawfish in town. So, you know, they usually have crawfish, too. I think especially early in the season, a lot of people were having trouble keeping stock. So crawdad hole was good, consistent for us. But, yeah, we took advantage of a beautiful day Sunday, and I know a lot of people took advantage on Saturday. So I think a lot of people ate crawfish this weekend.
Yeah. What, do they still have a store in Water Valley, too?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I think it's separate ownership, but
okay.
I believe there is a crawdad hole up there.
Yeah. So when you cook your crawfish, do you do it commercially or just for friends?
Just for friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would be too stressed trying to make money off cooking crawfish. Like I said, you know, a time frame is a time frame. You don't stick to it.
Right.
You know, it takes what it takes. Sometimes it's 20, 30 minutes. Sometimes it's 45 minutes or an hour.
Right.
When you got people asking when the crawfish is going to be ready.
Standing over the pot, staring at you.
Yeah. And then you always have the kids wanting to look at the live ones. I think that's, you know, one of the best parts about it is introducing people to a good crawfish boil and the way it's cooked. You know, a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes, the washing of the crawfish, seasoning the pots, everything of that nature.
Yeah, the purging or the cleaning.
Yeah, absolutely. The cleaning is the most important thing.
Tell us a little bit about the process.
Yeah, so, you know, the crawfish obviously live in a swamp. Yeah. So they're dirty little things. So, you know, I've heard a lot of people say purging crawfish. You know, I've seen people use regular salt on them. You know, I don't think that's super effective. You know, to each their own. But in my opinion, nothing replaces just consistent washing until you're running clean water.
Gotcha. So you just wash them yourself?
Absolutely, yeah. So to really purge a crawfish, I think you would need about 24 hours in good, clean, aerated water. Mm. And I don't know of any cooker that has time to go for that.
Do you do any kind of dipping sauce, or you're purist?
Yeah, so I do usually offer that on the sides, especially at the shrimp bowls. And I love a good horseradish sauce and a spicy ketchup, a little Worcestershire.
A crystal hot sauce.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mayonnaise?
I'll use a pre-spice kind of cheat, the mayonnaise horseradish sauce.
Gotcha.
That's usually what I do.
And then spice it up.
Absolutely.
So, Pat White, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate you joining us today. As I said, Carol's out and about, so we were happy to have you come in and talk crawfish. And you obviously know of which you speak.
It's great to be here.
So thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Pat White, good friend. Crawfish cooker from, you said you grew up in South Jackson.
Yes, sir.
But you drive to Vicksburg every day to work at the Corps of Engineers.
I do. Yes, sir.
How's that trip every day?
Not too bad. The fine folks at MDOT are taking care of the roads. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's a good easy sailing over there.
And you drive 5 days a week over and back?
Usually four. Uh-huh. 5 weeks. We do have some teleworkability after the pandemic. So
we've only got a couple of minutes. What's the restaurant scene in Vicksburg like these days?
Very interesting, actually. There's a new crawfish spot over there that does a plate lunch. You know, you have some new restaurants popping up downtown Vicksburg. I think, unfortunately, we're losing one down there. I believe I've heard the one of them downtown is, you know, not going to stay open much longer. So,
but what about the tomato place?
Tomato place is always great on 61 South. You know, even if you don't like tomatoes, if you go to tomato place, don't tell them no tomato.
Right. But it's a market and a restaurant.
A restaurant. Mm-hmm. Everything's fresh.
Flowers and plants and vegetables.
Absolutely. Homemade hot sauces.
It's a great institution. I don't know how long they've been there, but I've been going there a long time.
And if you've never been, make the trip.
Yeah.
It's worth the trip for sure.
All right. That's our take on crawfish. So we appreciate you joining us today. We will be back next Monday. As always, we are live on Mondays at 9 a.m. right here on MPB Think Radio. And we rebroadcast on Sunday mornings also at 9 a.m. And you can podcast us anytime on any podcast device or form in which you participate. Are you a podcaster?
No, sir.
No,
really.
No.
No, sir.
Live radio.
Live radio.
Make mine live. All right, that's it for this episode of Deep South Dining. Carol Palmer will be back next Monday to join us. We look forward to that, hearing where she's been and what she's up to. As always, we appreciate you joining us. Deep South Dining is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Think Radio. We are funded by the generous contributions from folks like yourself, and we thank you. Our show is produced by Marissa Vaughn and Java Chapman. For my co-host who's not with us, Carol Palmer, Pat White, and John Lester, I am Malcolm White, and we ask that you now stay tuned for the award-winning show, Now You're Talking, with Marshall Ramsey. That show recently won the best talk show at the Mississippi Broadcasters Association. So congratulations to the team for Now You're Talking. Followed by Southern Remedy at 11. And we again ask you to join us every Monday and every Sunday morning at 9 for more Deep South Dining on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.